Our text this morning, familiar psalm, Psalm 8. O Lord, our sovereign, how majestic is your name in all the earth. You have set your glory above the heavens. Out of the mouths of babes and infants, you have founded a bulwark. Because of your foes, to silence the enemy and the avenger. When I look at your heavens, the work of your fingers, the moon and the stars that you have established. What are human beings that you are mindful of them? Mortals, that you care for them. Yet you have made them a little lower than God and crowned them with glory and honor. You have given them dominion over the works of your hands. You have put all things under their feet, all sheep and oxen, and also the beasts of the field, the birds of the air, the fish of the sea, whatever passes along the paths of the sea. O Lord, our sovereign, how majestic is your name in all the earth. I would also share this verses 3 and 4, which are kind of the heart of the sermon from Eugene Peterson's translation, The Message. Peterson says, I look up at your macro skies, dark and enormous, your handmade sky jewelry, moon and stars mounted in their settings. Then I look at my micro self and wonder, why do you bother with us? Why take a second look our way? And may God bless this reading and hearing of this holy word. A few weeks ago, our worship planning committee was chatting together about this season, the fall, and Thanksgiving, and Advent, and Christmas, and stewardship season. And Andy Del Monte asked, as we were talking, why do we just spend one Sunday? Why do we one Sunday out of 52? Why do we only talk about stewardship then? Why don't you do a series of sermons with a stewardship theme? Sounded pretty good to me. So I'm going to do just that. And if you don't like it, you can blame Andy Del Monte when we're done here. And I was thinking as a theme for these next few weeks, the idea of original blessing, which is not original with me. It comes from that great old preacher, Carlisle Marnie, and I mentioned this in the November newsletter. Marnie never liked to talk about original sin. Instead, he talked about original salvation or original blessing. And he said, from the very beginning, we have been loved and cared for. We are the recipients of countless acts of love and mercy from others and from God. We are blessed from the very beginning. And so that's what I would like to think about with you over the next few weeks. This idea that we are blessed. We are the beloved. Without asking, we have been invited to share in the great banquet of life. What does that mean for us? And then, how do we choose to respond? And I want to start today just thinking a little bit about grace and blessing. You perhaps recall this classic scene from Thornton Wilder's Our Town, when Emily Webb comes back from the dead to Grover's Corners, the town of her childhood. She finds her mother and father and all her long-dead acquaintances still alive, and the town and its environs the same as when she was a child. At first, it is all so wonderful. But before long, she begs to go back to the grave. The sheer beauty and wonder of it all are just overwhelming. It's more than she can bear. She sobs as she shares her experience with the ever-present stage manager. I didn't realize, she says. So all that was going on, and we never noticed. Take me back up the hill to my grave. But first, wait, one more look. Goodbye. Goodbye, world. Goodbye, Grover's Corners. Goodbye, Mama and Papa. Goodbye to clocks ticking and Mama's sunflowers and food and coffee and new iron dresses and hot baths. Oh, Earth, you're too wonderful for anyone to realize you. She then turns to the stage manager and asks, do any human beings ever realize life while they live it? Every moment? He answers, no. The saints and poets, maybe. They do some. One of the great souls and brilliant minds of the 20th century, Abraham Joshua Heschel, suffered a severe heart attack late in life from which he never fully recovered. A friend who visited him in the hospital found him weak, barely able to talk. But Heschel was able to whisper this, Sam, when I regained consciousness, my first feeling was not despair and anger. I felt only gratitude to God for my life, for every moment I have lived. I have seen so many miracles. Boy, I'd like to be able to say that. I would like to be able to live like that, with an awareness, a keen awareness of the miracles all around me, each and every day. But I find myself haunted by Emily's question, do any human beings ever realize life as they live it? Every moment, do we realize the miracles? Do we realize the blessings? Do we? Oh, Lord, how majestic is your name in all the earth. When I look at your heavens, the work of your fingers, the moon and stars you have established, what are human beings that you are mindful of them? Mortals, that you care for them. I've wondered that at times myself. Does that Creator of heaven and earth really care about me? Is really mindful of me? And yet, says the psalmist, God is mindful, eternally mindful, even numbering the hairs on our heads, as Jesus said. My mind goes back to the parable of the lost sheep, which I shared with you just a couple of weeks ago. Recall that Jesus begins his parable with the question, which of you, having 100 sheep and losing one of them, does not leave the 99 in the wilderness and go after the one that was lost until he finds it? Which of you would do that? And to me, the answer is crystal clear. None of us would do that. If you owned that flock, and it was your entire fortune, your nest egg, the thing you were depending on to feed your family, to send your children to college, would you put all of that at risk to go after one? Leave them out there at the mercy of animals and the elements and God knows what, and go after the one? I don't think so. I mean, I might love that missing sheep, but I don't love it that much. It simply is not worth the risk. Who would do that? Who would take such a risk? Well, according to Jesus, God would. There is an extravagance about God's love, a riskiness, a willingness to go all in on our behalf, a willingness to grasp the future without demanding certainty. It would seem that we worship a God who knows absolutely nothing about risk analysis. God would make one horrible life insurance agent, I'll tell you. This is a God who, rather than measuring the potential costs and gains of love, chooses instead just to love. God calls us into life and then refuses to let any of us go. Original blessing. Think back to that film, Steel Magnolias. A young diabetic woman gets pregnant against the advice of her doctor. She tells her mother she's willing to run the medical risk to herself in order to have this child, an argument which her mother vigorously rejects. She has spent every year of her daughter's life trying to protect her and minimize any risk she might face. Now this. But her daughter argues that she would rather have a few minutes of happiness than a lifetime of boredom, a lifetime of just playing it safe. And so she chooses to have the child. Well, I think we can say the same thing about God and God's relationship with us. I don't know why God has called me into something out of nothing. I don't know why I have been given this undeserved gift of conscious living among conscious beings. I don't know why God has taken such a chance with me, continuing to give me life and blessing after all the many ways I've messed up and continue to mess up. I don't know why, but God has taken this risk. People, don't take your birth for granted. You have been given a free ticket to participate in a wondrous, surprising, miraculous story. Last Saturday, I caught a little bit of Garrison Keillor's Prairie Home Companion, and he was talking about Norwegians. I took some interest in this, since almost all of my family are Norwegians. And Keillor said, you know, employers love Norwegians. They are the greatest employees. They will work overtime and not ask for overtime pay. And why? Well, Norwegians don't want any time off because they don't really enjoy pleasure. I laughed so hard, I almost had to pull off the road. I know these people. They're my people. Too often I fear I'm one of those people. You know, my mind always goes back to that little comment by Robert Duvall in the film Tender Mercies. Remember, he says simply, I never trusted happiness. How easy it becomes for us to live as if we kind of believe that God has already exhausted all God can do in the past and has nothing left for the future. But then I think of some more words for Carlisle Marnie, which I also put in the newsletter. This is a test to make sure you're reading the newsletter, I guess. Marnie once said, roses grow in horse manure. And if we live in a world where roses grow in horse manure, then who am I to embrace despair? Well, you know, I want to say that to my Norwegian father, to my uncle, his brother. Indeed, I want to say that to my father's only son. I want to say that life can still be good without being perfect. We know darkness to be sure, but there's also so much light. We don't see everything, but we do see something. You know, and so can't we just learn to live with a certain expectation, always ready to be surprised by God's unexpected and amazing grace? Indeed. To take the risk of being surprised by joy. On this Reformation Sunday, I recall the struggle of Martin Luther, a dreadful struggle, really, within his own soul. He spent years of his life trying to earn God's love, to feel somehow that he deserved it, that he was worthy of God's love. My goodness, he wasn't even Norwegian. He did good works. He tortured his body. He became a monk among monks in his piety and prayer life. No one gave longer confessions than Brother Martin. The priest hated to see him coming to confession. Yet he still felt so unworthy and miserable. He didn't trust happiness. He didn't deserve happiness. The Beatitudes were a constant source of pain. He knew he could never live like that. And then one day, really the first day of the rest of his life, while reading Paul's words about grace in the letter to the Romans, well, I guess you could say Luther just kind of relaxed. You might say he finally just let go in God's presence, rather like someone struggling to stay afloat in a body of water, and discovered that he did not need to struggle so hard. He discovered he was held up, buoyed up, sustained by a love, an acceptance, a grace, which had been there all the time. Original blessing. He didn't sink. He was saved. And from that realization that he had been loved and blessed from the very beginning, he was able to let go of his anxiety and despair and discover instead a new birth of faith, courage, and hope. And one could say, the world changed. And so it occurs to me that perhaps our job as a church, as a community of faith, is to nurture this idea of original blessing. Yes, to help roses grow out of horse manure, trusting in the abundance of God's love and hope, not only in our own lives, but also in the abundance we want to share beyond ourselves out in the world. Always helping each other to perceive the grace-filled light, the original blessing that shines and continues to shine, even in the deepest darkness. Let us pray.